All right, you're all set to go.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. Excuse me. Let me get to my script. So I hereby call to order this regular meeting of the DESDDD District Central Independent Oversight Committee. Today's date is March 25th and the time is 10 a.m. This is a regular meeting of the IOC and it's being held electronically. This meeting is being recorded and the transcript of that recording will be posted on the ADOA IOC website. In an effort to avoid excess background noise and potential microphone feedback, please mute your microphone when you're not speaking, which I should probably mute. Give me one moment. Is the dog barking very loud? No? Okay, perfect. So the host of the meeting can mute you, but then you can unmute yourself when you would like to speak. You can mute yourself by clicking on the microphone icon at the bottom left corner of your screen or elsewhere, depending on your platform. And additionally, I've been asked to read the following statement. Do we have anyone that has to disclose a conflict of interest? And if there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. No conflict. So we will now have introductions of those present in this meeting. Morgan, if you can assist, that'd be great.
Yeah, would you like to start with committee members?
Sure.
Awesome. Oh, Eva?
Eva Hammett, ILC member. And I have a daughter with an adult that's now 40 with IDD.
Thank you. Mandy? Maybe, if you're ready. Maybe Carolyn?
This is Carolyn Welmer, member of the IOC, and my late sister-in-law, Nicole, was a member of DDD.
Thank you. Amber?
Good morning. Amber Stock, a member of the IOC as well, and I have several children on DDD. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And then we can kind of move into some DDD staff. We've got Leah with us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Leah Gibbs. I'm the administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Thank you. Christina?
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Christina Hedges. I am the DDD Office of Individual and Family Affairs Behavioral Health Advocate Supervisor.
Thank you. Joan?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Joan McQuaid, and I am with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Thank you. Michelle?
Good morning. I'm Michelle Rademacher, DDD, IOC liaison.
Thank you. Giselle?
Hello, I'm with District Central. I am the Quality Assurance Investigation Supervisor.
Thank you. Larry?
Good morning, Larry Allen with Arizona Department of Administration.
Thank you. Ian?
Hello, everybody. Ian Wilson, United Healthcare's Community Plan.
Thank you. Wendy?
Good morning, Wendy Herring with Mercy Care OIFA.
Thank you. Stephanie?
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Schwartz-Jacobs. I'm one of the Deputy Assistant Directors for DDD, supporting State Operator Residential Services and our Employee Engagement Team.
Thank you. We have Alex?
Hi, good morning. I'm Alex Levitan. I'm just a licensed psychologist who works a lot with this population and interested in learning more.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. And then we have Megan.
Hi, I'm Megan McCarthy. I also work with Dr. Levitan and share an interest in working with the population as well.
Thank you so much. All right. Is there anybody I missed?
I'll go ahead and introduce myself since I forgot, Morgan. Lisa Ellenberger, IOC Chair, and I am co-guardian of an adult with ID number of DDD, and my background's in school psychology and overall advocacy.
So sorry about that. Thank you. All right, and I'm Morgan O'Hara, and I'm the DDD IOC liaison.
Okay. Awesome. And thank you, Alex and Megan, for joining and introducing yourselves. So right now, I extend a welcome to any member of the public attending this meeting of the DDD District Central Independent Oversight Committee. You're invited to make a comment if you wish, but your comments will be limited to 3 minutes, and there will not be a discussion following your comments. Thank you in advance for your adherence to this time. Are there any call to the public at this time? No? Okay, then we'll go ahead and jump right into the agenda. I know that since we didn't have a regular meeting in February, and I know this has been pending on Eva's mind, as well as us looking at all the different policies, we'll go ahead and start with the policy changes. I think we did have some information on those policies. Not sure if they were sent to, or if they're, go ahead and start, Eva.
Okay, so it turns out some of them are not. So it turns out the final rule is finally being implemented by Access, which is 10 years in coming. And so DD had to align their policies with the final rule, which is why we have every one of the policies changed. And what you have to do is not only do you look at one policy that's getting changed, but part of the policy is impacted in another one. And the last time I brought up was 700, the behavior modification meds, about the second generation, increasing the weight, increasing triglycerides, blood pressure, lowering good cholesterol, and increasing fasting glucose. And the committee was not real happy with not doing that, but it turns out that in policy 54 that is already been effective, it turns out that among the things in line 21, the group home maintains the following records. And 21B, they have the documentation on individual needs. And 21B7 requires medical monitoring of the blood glucose testing and the blood pressure and the lab works. So there is no excuse for our members to go into PRC and not have that information, or the fact that they go into their med review and the group home does not take that information. And what I'd like to do is to make a comment into the open policy 700 behavior modification meds, that, you know, not only do our members should have a yearly wellness check. So when they have the yearly wellness check, they can have the lab works. Maybe we need to figure out if their fasting glucose and their blood pressure is high, how often should they be doing that? And this information should be taken to this med review for the psychologist when they are on the second generation meds.
So it is your concern that there might be a policy change that will impact the review of those
the biggest
monitoring?
So what I wanted to do was to put into the policy, because it just says that they do it. And in 54, they say they're supposed to, but nowhere, it's sort of like, all this stuff is okay, you collect this data, but does that data go to the psychiatrist? And so I guess part of what I wanted to do is to make sure that these, if they're on if they're on second generation meds, that the results of the glucose, the blood pressure, and the lab stuff, which should be a metabolic screening, which would affect the cholesterol and triglycerides. So the thing of it is can we make a comment to include that in the 700 behavior modification meds, so
basically what I'm hearing you say, Eva, is to that you want to make a comment to see if we can add to the policy 700 to include that the medication monitoring of psychotropic individuals in that take psychotropic medications, that this blood work gets reviewed by a psychiatrist. And is there any recommendation on how frequently? I mean, is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes.
Okay. Because right now in PRC, we just have the reviews, right? We have medication reviews, making sure the medications are consistent on both BTP and PCSP, or et cetera. So how would we go about adding something like this to policy, or recommending something like this to policy? I'm asking the DDD ADOA world. And
so we can make a comment.
A motion?
Put it in the policy change so that data goes to the med review, and then possibly have the psychiatrist make a comment in the med review about why they're going to stay on the second generation meds, even though it impacts their
metabolic panel.
Yeah. So you know, it's sort of like all this stuff has to get, you know, it's like carried through. And so if you are doing a review and don't have that information, but yet you see they're on that, you know, someplace, that information needs to be recorded in their person-centered okay. plan or in their behavior health BTP.
Okay. I know that, is there anyone else, committee members that would like to speak on behalf of that? Amber?
So I just wanted to share my own personal experience. I have two children that are being serviced at two different agencies. One of the agencies does require the blood work every 3 months, which, I mean, it's like if we don't go in and do the blood work, then we won't get a refill on his medications. And then the other agency, I don't think they've ever asked for me to get my daughter's blood work done. So I'm on board, Eva. I think that's a great idea.
Okay. Anyone else like to add or?
I just wanted to say that a lot. I know for me, I get my labs done every 3 months at the PCP, so a lot of the members may already be getting it done.
Yeah, I think some members do, but some members it's maybe just an annual and metabolic or the metabolic panel, which looks at the triglycerides rather than every 3 months. Yeah. So I think go ahead.
I know with mine it's like every 3 months or so that I do it. Well, there could be other members that do the same thing. So.
Hey, okay, Lisa, I guess
yes?
My concern is with my younger daughter, her triglycerides have been high. And so I guess my worry is they don't do anything about it except continue to say, you know, work on your diet and all that. This child is very active. She dances every single day. She eats very healthy. She has celiac. So, I mean, she is a really good eater. And so my only worry, Eva, is what do they do with that information for DDD clients that are under the age of 18, because they're not going to do anything about the triglycerides for them.
It only has to do if they're on a second generation med, psychotropic meds.
Yep, both of my children are. That's why I brought it up. Yeah.
Well, in second generation. You
know, my thing wasn't because your children are under that early childhood development, all that medicine stuff, and the psych. So I'm not evaluating the psych. I'm not
psychiatrist.
So I'm not saying what they should do. I'm just saying we need to follow up, just sort of like
a recommendation.
A recommendation so that we can see the fact that the psychiatrist has that information to make a judgment. And he has to decide to do that. It's not our place to do that, but I feel it's our place to make sure he has that information on each one of our IDD members.
Okay. And I think that, so how do we get this into comment? I guess this is where I am novice, Leah.
Lisa, I put an email address in the chat. It's dddpolicy@azdes.gov. And that would be the appropriate place to capture the recommendation. And then all of the policies in DDD have different owners. I'm going to use that in quote, different subject matter experts who oversee the content of those policies, and the committee would want to capture your recommendation, send it to the policy unit. They would then work with the folks who are the subject matter experts on that policy.
Excellent.
To make a decision about any changes to the policy.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Morgan and Michelle, do we need to make a motion to send a, or do we need to create a subcommittee to develop exactly what we are wording, or can we just make a motion that we will send an email?
So since I make comments on the DD site for policies, but I have to put my name on it. And so to put IOC's name on the policy, so I could do it if you wanted to, but I would need to have a motion that the IOC agreed to make the comment on the policy.
Okay. So do we have somebody that would make a motion that indicates the IOC agreement for policy 700 commentary related to second generation medication?
I will. I'll make a motion.
Okay. So Amber will make a motion. So Amber, you'll just have to indicate, I'll make a motion that the IOC is in agreement to make a policy comment and send it to DDD.
Okay. So that I just repeat what you just said, or?
Correct.
Okay. So I make a motion that the IOC committee agrees to, I'm sorry, help me out.
To make a comment on the policy.
The policy.
Regarding second generation medication.
Sorry, my dogs are barking.
It's okay. We can't hear them. Regarding second generation medication.
Sorry. Go for it.
Second generation medication.
Second generation medication.
And metabolic panel.
And metabolic panel. Thank you for that support. I appreciate you.
And do we have a second?
Eva seconds.
Eva seconds that motion. And so we just need all those in favor, all IOC committee members in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Is anyone in IOC, is anyone opposed? No opposition, so therefore that motion has been completed. Yay. Thank you, Eva, for bringing this up and for being so diligent in regards to it.
I have more policies.
Okay, what's the next? What's the next one? And
so one of them is emergency measures. And it turns out that under A, DD employees or service providers can do emergency measures. So under C, they said that they can specific one-time use of psychotropic meds, and the professional has to order and administer it immediately. And my thing is, I know they write an ER. You know, they have to, if they do an emergency measures, they have to do an IR. But on the same token, because emergency measures in the whatever, I feel like if they have this professional order and administrated immediately, I would like the IOC to be notified immediately and not just through the IOC, the emergency
IRs.
And through the IR, sort of like the death.
Death.
Because I think it's serious, because I think what we need to do is to be able to track how many of these specific one-time psychotropic meds are being done on a particular individual.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is, for example, an individual that is potentially in the midst of, let's say a psychotic episode, and let's just say their a crisis team is coming with paramedics, and that paramedic gets permission from the guardian and or the individual to provide a psychotropic type of tranquilizer that allows them to transport the individual more safely, whatever it might be. So those types of things, Eva. And that's just one example.
So I just wonder, I guess what I need to do is to look at who the professional is that that orders the one time that has to be done immediately. And so since I don't know much about people in crises, you know, but I just feel like that maybe what we need to do is to make sure that we either QMU tracks it, or that we get notified it, so that we understand that this one individual is not, you know, every other month is getting specific done. And so that's why I'd like to have a motion and make a comment and put it in. And just like we did with the other one.
Okay. And how realistic for, I'd like to just open this up to DDD or Caroline, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, because I'm not sure I really understand what this means, what is actually happening. So, it sounds like this means that, they're somehow getting emergency permission from a doctor to administer a med that has not been previously prescribed to this member.
That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
I don't know if that's new or whatever. Because I just look at the policy and I don't look at the scratched out things. And so personally, it reminds me of the stuff at ASH. Remember when they do that stuff at ASH, they have to have a doctor's order and all that other stuff. And so what happens is the doctor, it doesn't say doctor, it says professional.
And yeah, it could even be a paramedic, I've seen it occur.
And so it has to be done. And so basically I feel like we just need to track it other than through just the IR process.
And is this, can we open a question for, the members on the meeting, is this something that that can be easily, or not easily, but is this something that the DDD already does? I mean, I know you measure it through emergency measures and they have an IR. Go ahead, Leah, were you about to speak?
Well, I wanted to hear the rest of your question, which is why I went back on mute. So is it something easy? Absolutely not. Is it something that is tracked? Absolutely. And I can't speak for the five different quality assurance areas who process those incident reports as to what that would or could look like, or even how often it may occur. I know that I'm sure you are aware that there is a process in place anytime emergency measures are used two or more times in a 30-day period that the team gets together. That's not going to change in this at all. But I certainly cannot say to you, the committee can absolutely make a request to have immediate notification in the event of these. However, quality will make that determination as to whether or not they can meet that request. You will get it through incident report review. Absolutely.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Eva, on this?
Well, we can write a comment in the policy, just like we're going to do for the other one. And they can pay attention to it, or they not. We don't even know if they'd even put it into the policy. So all we're doing is making a comment, making the suggestion, and then they have to review it. So okay. When they review it, they will find out if it is even feasible and all that other stuff. And if it's feasible, then they'll put it into the policy.
Okay. And we're specifically, this is focusing on the one-time use of psychotropics without a psychotropic previously.
It's a one-time
being prescribed
that has to be done immediately.
Okay. Please understand, Lisa, it may or may not be a medication that the member had had before. It's just that we can't do typical PRNs, as you know,
yes,
with psychotropic medication. And so what this policy allows is in an emergency to get a one-time order for the med, but it would not necessarily be something the member doesn't have, because it would have to be something that they would have on hand. They can't just order it and not have the medication, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. I've seen it occur. I've seen a team of paramedics come with in a crisis situation and with a guardian parent present, and they immediately administered that one-time use of psychotropic as a type of tranquilizer to allow that individual to be transported. I'm assuming that those are accounted for under emergency measures, and if something like that was done two or more times within 30 days, the team would meet to review. However, I think the comment of hurt the policy to review how they potentially can trend or track these one-time uses. So I don't know what the other IOC members think about this, but I don't see a reason not to make a comment in this particular policy change.
Can we make a motion?
Sure.
Okay. Eva wants to make a motion that the IOC submits a comment on policy 900 emergency measures that when the specific one-time use of psychotropic meds by a professional ordered and administrated immediately, that IOC is notified.
Okay, do we have a second of that motion?
So, Leah? So I have a question. Oh, sorry, Leah, go ahead.
The way you worded the motion, Eva, IOC is notified through the incident reporting process. So you might want to add to the ending of that motion about when IOC would be notified.
Oh, immediately? Upon?
Or within 48 hours?
Okay.
Is that fair, within 48 hours?
Okay. Okay. Because IRs don't come out that fast.
Sorry. Carolyn?
So I have a question. So if we're notified within 48 hours, what actions are we going to take? You know, because we meet monthly. So yeah,
true. Well, should it maybe be more than 48 hours or with a, like, come up with a reasonable time or a reasonable time frame?
Well,
with deaths, I think sometimes it's how frequently after a death do I think it's sometimes it could be a week, sometimes it's.
Well, the biggest problem comes in is the reason why you want to do it is maybe you could get Morgan to help us track the fact that, I mean, the biggest problem is this individual one going to get it every month, you know, because even though the, or maybe what we could do is to put it in, make the motion so that even though the emergency measures, two or more emergency measures the team have to meet. So maybe what we might want to do is if they have this, that the team has to meet immediately.
And I think, isn't that already written basically? If the two or more emergency measures within 30 days, the team must meet?
Yeah, but because this med is supposed to be specific and rare, that means you should not have two in a month. So what I'm saying is once one is done, the team should meet. It's sort of like when they come out of crisis after 72 hours, the team is supposed
to. The team meets. Yeah. So are you saying that even if the psychotropic medication is used one time, that the team should meet is what you're recommending?
Yeah. How about that? And then that takes us off the hook. And that puts the burden back on the team
I can see the rationale for that, because if a psychotropic medication is used as an emergency measure, there's typically going to be some significant difficulties that are occurring within that individual where the team may want to meet. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. So basically making a comment that indicates that if the one-time use of psychotropic medication is used as an emergency measure, that the individual's team meets immediately
within 72 hours. That's what they have to do out of crisis, you know.
And this would account for a crisis.
Yeah, so this is that's how they wrote it for crisis, you know. And so if they're going to go for this, most probably they're going to be in crisis. And so
what are the team's thoughts on that? Or the committee members, are you in favor of commenting on policy 900 emergency measures, that if an individual is has the one-time use of psychotropic medication as an emergency measure, that the team meet and review within 72 hours?
I could amend my motion.
I know for myself, just some of the experiences I've seen when these one-time psychotropic medications have been used as emergency measures, whether they're this individual didn't have a BTP because they were living at home, or a behavior plan because they lived at home. However, it was a situation where the whole team needed to meet immediately to discuss next steps. Carolyn, did you have a thought or question on that?
No, I'm just mulling it over.
Okay. I think it's justified. I mean, I think that it's definitely just another area of oversight that kind of just says, okay, this is a big deal, and allows for the team to kind of I think it would be, it warrants a comment, Eva, and I'm not sure about other team members, but we can make a motion and see how it goes. Would you like to make that motion, Eva?
Okay, I make a motion that if specific one-time use of psychotropic meds with a professional order and administrated immediately, that the member's team meets within 72 hours.
And do we want to add something that says as a source of emergency measure at the end?
Well, policy 900 is all on.
Okay. Okay. So under policy 900. Okay. Do we have a second?
This is Carolyn. I second that the team meet within 72 hours of emergency psychotropic meds.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposition? Okay. Okay, no one opposed. So therefore, that comment will be made supported by the IOC committee under policy 900 emergency measures. Thank you, Eva.
And I have one more.
Okay.
Policy 52 on HAB staffing schedule requirements. And at the last meeting, I brought this up, and they were talking about requirement. And it's sort of like all these policies, you have to go back and look at them. And in 1240, it says that habilitation cannot be done in a community residential setting. And I had a hard time finding a definition for a community residential setting, but it turns out in policy 100, everybody should read policy 100, behavior support manual. It has everything in it, all the guiding principles, behavior, reasons for behavior, how the team should look at meds or a pain. And they said the community residential setting is a group home, an ADH, and a CDH. And when you really look at the group home policy 54, you see, and this is where the final rule from CMS and Access is impacting DD and changing how DD works. Because what it means is somebody that lives in a group home cannot have a HAB goal of brushing their teeth.
And is this accurate?
It says in policy that HAB is not allowed in a residential
community residential settings.
Let me tell you. So what happens is in a group home, if you look at the group home requirements, they're supposed to do a daily routine, promote independence, yeah, autonomy, members' choice, and all this other stuff.
And they do. So, I mean, I do know that individuals in group homes have had goals. That Leah has her hands up. We'll just pause for a moment, Eva. Thank you, Leah.
I know that it sounds confusing, but when it is not about HAB goals, the service of group home, the service of developmental home are 24-hour habilitation services. What they're talking about is we cannot put an hourly habilitation worker into a group home on top of what the group home is providing in that service. It's not saying you can't have HAB goals.
Okay. And is this going to be a change to policy 52?
No, that's nothing. Or is this not something we've always been unable to put an hourly HAB worker in a group home on top of the habilitative
or ADH
in the group home. Right.
Okay. And it makes sense because it's kind of like it's maybe a protection of double, almost saying that the ADH or the group homes are already receiving funds to provide these services. Why pay additional individual to go in and do the same services that they're already receiving through those staff members at the home? Almost like a double.
Correct.
Is that why
double dipping, Lisa, just so that you know?
Yeah, yeah, double dipping.
Is that why in 1240 it says that the division not authorized have to providers services in community residential settings? Is that what they're talking about?
That's what they're talking about, Eva. We can't put the hourly habilitation worker into the group home or the developmental home.
Oh, okay. So,
and that makes sense.
Okay. So back to chapter 100, which I find very interesting. In line 29, it says, IOC is responsible for the development, review, approving, and implementing behavior plans for the division members. And what I find very interesting is in the policy for program review committee, IOC is not mentioned at all. And so I need to understand why in the program review committee, IOC is not mentioned as somebody that needs to attend. And yet in policy 100 under behavior support manuals, IOC is responsible for implementing behavior plans for the division members. Can anybody explain that to me?
I would recommend, Eva, that as a committee, you make a determination about a recommendation and let it go back to policy. I'm in 100. I don't know where you are in 100. Where
she said you? Line one, line nine. Did you say, Eva?
29. It mentioned.
And I know years past, I know that PRC and the program review committees and IOC, well, the IOC chair actually signed off on every program.
I know.
And every behavior treatment plan. And that's.
So, yeah.
I'm wondering if this is something that we might need to, as a committee, maybe look into policy 100 and, or if we could see if we can get somebody to, instead of emailing us or everything, just that policy 100 related to IOC and program review committee / behavior treatment plans, as well as maybe the definition under the participants of program review committees. And then we can maybe have a discussion at our next IOC meeting. And once we have those areas, that policy 100 related to IOC line 29 isolated, as well as the program review committee members and IOC's involvement. Do you think that would be a good place to focus on?
Okay, 400, policy 400 is the PRC.
Okay, and Leah has her hand raised again.
Policy 100 is about the policy review team, not program review committee. I just want to make sure we're talking apples to apples here.
So 100 is the application definitions and guiding principles.
Okay, so I'm in chapter 100, management of division policies and procedures. So which manual are you referring to, Eva?
I don't know. I just copied it. It was on 100 application definitions and guiding principles. And they have all these things, and then they talk about
the guiding supports, Leah.
And it's the one that has citizen-centered planning on it. It's got positive behavioral supports on it, and it has reasons why people have behaviors. The four reasons why you have behaviors, and then they had this comment before that, in 29, number 29 under the guiding principles is IOC.
So you're talking about the behavior support manual, not policy 100.
Well, whatever policy 100
behavior already, but
yeah, that's behavior support manual. I have too many things that I copied and whatever. It's the behavior support manual.
I can't find it there either.
Eva, so, but what I'm hearing you say is your concern with it is that IOC is mentioned to help be a part of that behavior support manual. However, under program review committee, we're not required any longer to be a part of that, or what? Okay, what is your concern in regards to this?
I don't understand why we were. I can understand maybe we were reviewing and approving, but I didn't understand why we would be implementing behavior plans.
I would agree with that comment, Eva. You would not be implementing behavior plans.
Correct.
And maybe the language needs to be evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to find the policy. I have so many things that I've gone through this morning.
So shall we put that on a parking lot shelf, Eva?
I guess.
Let's put that behavior support policy / behavior plan and that implementation. We'll look for that wording again, and then we'll come back around to it either next month, if you aren't able to find it within the next few minutes. Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And then they have, I can't remember, chapter 22, just where they're putting restitution's now back available, and it has to be in the member's behavior plan. And I just need everybody that does PRC to maybe read chapter 22 provisions and restrictions and understanding what has to go into how the restrictions have to be put into the behavior plan.
And really understanding restitution and the individual's ability to comprehend, from my understanding in that policy, it's written as, based upon the individual's ability to comprehend, correct?
Comprehend, they're supposed to have, so the behavior is supposed to, there's supposed to be an objective to teach them not to damage it, and they can't take more of their money than they have. So it can't make them restitute. There has to be like a payment plan
or some kind proportionate.
So Carolyn, restitutions means financial restitution?
Yes.
It's
back in policy 200.
And so this is financial restitution for property damage or
yep. Or if they maybe smashed somebody's car window to breaking another member's television in their room.
So it's specifically limited to property damage?
Nope. Whatever.
No.
It results in property damage or property loss needs to be included in the behavior plan. So is restitution for behaviors that result in property damage and property loss needs to be included in the behavior plan. The restitution furthers a goal identified and is individualized in a member's behavior plan. The member has an understanding of restitution plan and the purpose of restitution so that the member can accept their responsibility and learn. And then it says, Statute 36-551.01 sets forth additional rights for those with developmental disabilities, but not limiting to fair compensation for labor. So anyway, that's what I copied.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's Leah has her hand raised.
Sorry, Lisa. I just want to make sure that the committee understands that what this does is allow for, depending on the member, their ability to understand and learn from restitution. By no means does it mean that every member who is served by DDD, restitution would be something as part of their plan. I just want to make sure you understand that.
And the only reason I brought it up is because I don't read behavior plans, and it's something that I know our last chair really fought against restitution, you know, that you put restitution, but they have now changed the policy, and I just needed the IOC to be aware of that change in the policy. And if you don't understand it, you should read Policy 200, so that you understand all the requirements needed.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a slightly controversial type of thought. I mean, there is something to be said about some of our members are capable of understanding what they do, and are capable of understanding the concept of restitution. And then of course there are many of our members that do not, and it's a matter of making sure that the teams that are involved in these considerations of restitution to really know the individuals. And I think that, I am hopeful and that, the team members do have an understanding of the members that they work with. I'm kind of right on the fence when it comes to that. I can see where restitution would be a viable option for some individuals, and then I can see where it would not be with others. I don't have a stance as to, I'm not strongly against restitution, nor am I a proponent for those individuals who cannot comprehend it. Any other, Carolyn?
So I have a couple of thoughts on this. I'm kind of coming at it from a different angle. So it sounds to me like the purpose of restitution is to allow the member to experience what we might call natural consequences.
I believe so, and learning.
Their behavior in that, you know, I've damaged your TV, therefore I need to replace your TV, and I have the mental competency to understand that my actions were wrong, and so I'm going to pay restitution. So it's kind of like, to me, it sounds like it's two parts. One is the member experiencing natural consequences of their behavior in the way that, say, you or I might. And then the other part of it is the person who was harmed being compensated for damage to their property. And it doesn't say exclusively property, but I think that that's how it's going to be implemented. And I have a little bit of a different perspective on this. And let me explain. I recently read an essay by a woman who had been a victim of domestic violence. And ultimately what happened in the court system was that her perpetrator was fined for damaging her vehicle, but was not fined for damaging her. And that sends a very powerful message that property matters more than people. And so that to me is concerning. In that restitution may not include restitution for harm specifically to a person. And then my other thought on restitution is that, you know, to me, restitution often starts with simply an apology. And I know that's hard to put into rules,
but I'm kind of wondering where that is in here as well.
Eva?
This policy is open for another 2 days, so IOC could make a comment if Carolyn would like to put results in property damage or property loss or injury to a person. Because some people have to go to the hospital if they injure the, so we could put that in if you'd like to make a motion.
Yeah, I would have to have somebody help me walk me through that.
So you can make a motion. You can make a motion that the IOC committee would like to comment on the policy number, which Eva will give us.
200
regarding restitution, chapter 22, I believe. So that restitution is not only in consideration of property damage, but also person or personal injury.
Okay, so this is Eva. Do you want to make the motion, or shall I?
I can make a motion because I have it. So as the Vision Behavior Support Manual, Chapter 200. Prohibitions and restricted techniques, so we want to add to the line the restitution furthers a goal. The member has an understanding. Well, let me see, where is it? Oh, here, the restitution for behaviors that result in property damage or property loss, or injury to an individual
is personal or personal injury / injury to an individual.
Yeah.
So
we're just going to add the to that line. We're just going to add the person. How are we saying that person?
I would say to personal and to include. So after it says on property damage, to include personal injury / and or injury to another individual or injury to an individual. Does that sound right, Carolyn? Personal injury or injury to an individual?
Yes.
So it really would be just the repetition of the restitution policy 200, I believe chapter 22. .. on property damage to also include an individual.
And shall I second it? Oh, I see Amber has her hand raised.
Amber?
I'm going to play devil's advocate a minute, just because I have a son with severe autism, DMDD, and I honestly think that I could request restitution for the abuse that he puts me and my family through on a daily basis. So I love where this is going, so please don't get me wrong, but I would like us to put some boundaries or something specific in place here, because I think of him when he's older and he's in that mindset. And I know you guys are saying that it would be something discussed with the team for or in the behavior plan, but my mind is kind of spinning right now on how all of that would really look. I love Carolyn's idea. I think that they do need to understand that it's not just property, but people. I really support that, Carolyn, and I love that, but I just, my brain is spinning a little bit here.
So yes, and I think it's so important that we recognize that this has to be in such a very limited way, okay. Because like you said, someone with severe autism, they are not in control of themselves the way that we are. And it's so difficult. But, you know, for example, I have a cousin who is mentally, has a developmental disability. And there were times when she would kind of use that disability to get out of doing things or get out of responsibility for things.
Absolutely.
So I know that does happen. And I've also heard that from professionals in the area of developmental disabilities. But at the same time, I don't want people to be helpful for things where they really don't have that level of control and or awareness.
And I think that part of the policy does, and Eva, you've read through that policy more recently probably than us or than me at this moment. It also indicates that the team is to consider. There's a lot of considerations that are a part of that policy. It's not just a, okay, they've done some personal injury towards another individual, therefore they will need to pay restitution, correct?
So the people have to have an understanding of the plan, and they have to accept the responsibility and learn. And so it can only be done in a behavior plan.
Okay. Which also means that if that individual lives in their family home, that they wouldn't be required to have a behavior treatment plan per se.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I think that there definitely are some boundaries already. There's some boundaries put in place through the policy. Making a comment and for the policymakers to consider adding personal injury/injury to another individual, I think just adds another layer that will allow them to see it for what restitution can be considered, that it's not always going to be property damage.
So are we going to have a second and vote on it?
Sure.
So I guess my question is, how do we, you know, I think we've got the first part, which is making sure that restitution isn't just limited to property damage, but then how do we talk about the second part, where I really feel that the person has to have, in order to be required to make restitution, they need to have the level of understanding that makes it appropriate and the level of control over their own behavior that makes it appropriate. And because without those two things, it's so unfair.
And I think that's in policy, correct, Eva? That's in
okay.
There.
Okay. And is there any way that that when this happens, that it would be reported to the IOC, perhaps under incident reports or something, just so that we could keep tabs on it?
It would be. What area? It always I guess it would depend on what the actual situation is. But property damage and personal injury damage would be in IRs. Eva?
So it has to be put in a behavior plan. Where is the behavior plan? In PRC. And don't IOC sit on PRC?
Yes, okay. You're right, Eva. Okay. Yeah, so I'm comfortable with seconding this.
Okay, seconding the addition of in the restitution policy 200, chapter 22, that not only does it indicate restitution on property, but it also includes personal injury/injury to an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, then we'll go ahead and make a comment to that policy. And thank you, Eva, for helping with those.
Okay, so how do we, just so I understand, how do we make that comment? So is someone from the committee going to go into the system and, you know,
so where that these, you send I send recommendations?
I could go through and I could do all three of them.
Okay, and would it be okay for us to review, to look at those, or is it, do we need to create a subcommittee to look at those before emailing them, since we've already done the motion? Okay, so we don't need. Okay, perfect.
The only difference is between me making a comment is the fact that now I can put in that IOC.
Yes. Yeah, and just to follow up, I'd really like the comment about the restitution to really explain very clearly that, Leah says they're open until March 29th, to explain really clearly that that by only doing restitution for physical property damage, you send a message that damage to a person is not important, and that's why it's important to include both.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay. If there's no further questions or discussions on policy changes, we'll move on. That's okay. The monitoring of the ICFs. I know this is something that came up in previous IOC meetings, monthly meetings, and we did not get, from my understanding, from the 2018 meeting, Eva, that there was follow-up from DDD, I believe Frederica followed up with her supervisors, and correct me if I'm wrong, and there was nothing in policy indicating IOC's involvement in monitoring of ICS. And I know that there was a discussion in the past, and I remember being a part of the IOC committee, and we toured the different ICFs in the Central Phoenix area / District Central. However, I wasn't at that meeting, which Eva mentioned, where it was discussed, but I think it's kind of just become kind of a moot point. But so there is nothing written in policy that indicates the IOC is a participant of assisting and monitoring ICS. Would that be an accurate statement? Leah?
I think it'd be best if we could let Stephanie speak to this, since Stephanie
okay.
operated ICF.
So that is accurate.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I'm welcome. I welcome you to request to visit. We can do that anytime. Just let me know and I can coordinate that. But yes, IOC is not part of any kind of monitoring.
Okay. And that's
Steph, you might want to clarify what you just said, because they're part of a lot of monitoring, just not IOC.
So I can talk about all the monitoring that ICFs go through. Yes, we just finished up one at ATPC. So DHS completes annual surveys where they go through and request information for the prior year for surveys. They also do a complaint survey, and what a complaint means from the DHS perspective is incident reports, abuse and neglect that are reported to DHS. We're required to report them within a day, and they come out, depending on the investigation that we complete within 5 days, they come out and do a complaint survey where they'll go through the same information and they determine if they substantiate the claim of abuse or neglect, if they're unable to substantiate the claim of abuse or neglect, or if they unsubstantiated the claim of abuse or neglect. So that's, we haven't been able to figure out their logic with that, but they do that as well. We also have internal monitoring to state operated. We have a quality assurance team that goes in and does monitoring, and DDD's quality team also has a person who does monitoring every 6 months of the ICFs.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for that update, Stephanie.
Sure.
People are always here looking at stuff, so.
That's true. Yes, that's true.
All right. So if there's no more discussion on monitoring of ICS, we'll go ahead and move on. Okay, number 8, discussion of providers as IOC committee members. I think I may have added this on one point because I had at one time, it was discussed a couple of years ago that it would, I actually was, it was mentioned that, like, for example, I'm a member of IOC and I wanted to do respite for an individual during the summers and school breaks. And I discussed it with somebody in DDD and they said that I couldn't be, continue to be, like I couldn't do both. However, that then I found out was not accurate later. So I just wanted to get clarification. Like for example, I know of an individual that is interested in becoming an IOC committee member and she works for a an agency. She works for, I believe she's works at a day program. She's in a DTA type of setting. And I just wanted to open it up to ADOA, DDD, and get a real clear understanding of providers also being IOC committee members. And of course, if there was a subject that they needed to submit a conflict of interest, of course, that's always available. Anyone have answers to that?
Larry, are you still on the call?
I am, Lisa. Good evening. How are you?
Good day. Hi.
this is Larry at ADOA. Yes, per statute, it doesn't specifically say for DDD how many providers can be on the committee, but generally the IOCs follow 413804 statute, where it does say that you can have up to 2 providers on a committee, no more, as voting members. Now you can have a non-voting member, a provider to be on your committee, to be like an ad hoc member. And so they can be on your committee, but only 2 are allowed.
So is that, does that also include like if somebody is works for an agency as a provider, or what if they have a career that doesn't, that they're not providers, however, they maybe provide respite for like a family member.
It still does not matter. Okay. Only if there's a, only should, if say like if you're talking about a specific incident report and that particular provider has knowledge of that particular incident, then they would need to recuse themselves as having a conflict. But other than that, that shouldn't be any barriers there for that particular provider.
Okay, so it's basically just a general statement indicating that up to 2 providers can be on a committee.
Yes, correct.
But it doesn't define provider.
No, it does not. It does not.
Okay. Okay, does anybody have any questions or discussions on that? I think that answered my question. Okay, then we'll keep going. Training for IOC members, Article 9 and Code of Conduct Ethics, which is a newer training. I think we had brought this up to possibly see if we could get training. I'd like to see an Article 9 kind of, and I know we have the formal Article 9s that we can take online and remotely. However, I was hoping that we could do some type of either twice yearly or once every 6 months. I don't think we'd need it any sooner or any more than that, but just kind of a review of Article 9 or any other potential trainings that that IOC members may or may not want to be a part of. And that's something that I guess would be a request for DDD or ADOA, or how we would be able to incorporate that into our meetings. I'm not thinking of like a 2-hour Article 9. I was thinking of more a real briefing of that we can have in addition to the once every 3 years that we're supposed to repeat Article 9. How could we bring that to our IOC meetings? Leah?
Lisa, we would really need to explore that, because Article 9 is actually a 4-hour training. Mm-hmm. And I'm not hearing you say you want to be trained. So you want to be trained, but not trained.
No, I know it would be in addition to the formal training that we would do on our own. So in addition to having a once every 6 months, having just a brief review of key points of Article 9, almost like an IOC refresher.
I don't have a really good answer for that.
Okay. What about an IOC? This is the other thing, was an Article 9 formal 4-hour training that is that's not just the general, where we can maybe as an IOC committee, those who haven't taken it recently, where we can maybe even statewide have a couple of options where we can sign up to where it's all IOC committee members.
I believe that is something we could ask our Office of Professional Development trainers to offer.
Absolutely. I think that would be great.
It would be good for you to ask questions with each other that are unique to what you see.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. If you want to take it to the committee to vote and make a request, we can absolutely potentially take that forward for you.
Let's do that. Would that need to be a motion or just a vote?
Probably a motion.
Okay. Do we have anybody that would make a motion on that would indicate or motion that DDD look into an Article 9 training for IOC members available to IOC members statewide?
This is Carolyn. I make a motion that DDD look into providing a training for IOC members statewide, so that Title IX issues specific to the duties of an IOC member be addressed.
Article 9, great. Do we have a second?
I second.
Thank you, Amber. All those in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Okay, anyone opposed? No one is opposed. Thank you very much. Thanks, Leah. Thank you, committee members. So we'll move on if there's no other discussion there. No time. Let's see. What about I'm going to skip ask questions responses from January motion for right now and move that. I just wanted to go to incident reports, medication errors. I know Carolyn has put together quite a bit of information for this, I believe.
So, okay. Yes. So as I've been looking at medication errors and struggling to keep up with reviewing medication errors, what I've seen is that the medication errors fall into three of the most common categories, which are medication refusals. We see a lot of that. Medication has run out, so there's a gap in dosing. And then there's other medication errors, which are things like skipped doses or wrong dose given, wrong medication given. Those are much more rare. So my question is, for the medication refusals, those take a tremendous amount of time. And I'm wondering if they should be their own category. And the reason for this is that to me, it's not at all a medication error. It's a member refusing to take their medication. And the thing that we don't, the information that we don't have as IOC members is when a member repeatedly refuses to take their medication, or when a member's missing their medication is a really serious issue for a medical or behavioral reason. And I can't track that as reviewing it because I don't have the member identification number. I just have the IRC, the incident report number. So that's one question I have. The other question, and I don't know, Leah, do you want to address that? Does anyone want to address that before I go to my next question?
I really feel like that would need to go to quality and how they handle those. Okay.
Okay. And then my other question is medication, often I see medication has run out, so they're unable to get to administer a dose. And that falls into three categories, that situation. The first one is failure to order the medication in a timely manner. And occasionally I even see medication reports where they say, well, you know, we ordered it the day before and the doctor didn't respond in a timely manner, or the pharmacy didn't respond in a timely manner. And, you know, ordering it the day before it's needed is not a timely ordering of medication. And then the other thing that happens is staff try to order the refill, but the member needs to see the doctor before the doctor will write a proper refill. And when that happens, usually they're able to order some, they contact the doctor's office, and the doctor's office is willing to order, you know, like 15 days or something, you know, but it often results in, again, a gap in medication administration, missed doses. And then the third situation is where the staff really have done their job, but it's something outside of their control, like a medication shortage or issues with the doctor's office where it's not refilled in a timely manner. So my question about this is, what is the timeline for ordering medication refills? So what is the expectation for staff ordering those medication refills? What are the DDD requirements for that tracking? Who's assigned that responsibility? You know, what does DDD require for having a tracking methodology? And then does DDD document that failure to place timely orders, so that if one particular agency is having a lot of issues with that, that can be addressed with that care agency? And then also, you know, if a member needs, you know, what on the bottle it will say, you know, 6 refills left. And then it will say 5 refills left and so on. So when it gets to the point that there are 0 refills left, that's usually an indication that you need to go in to see the doctor to get more of the medication. So my question is, how is that being tracked? Because that should be tracked, you know, by the care staff, so that they know that that client needs a doctor's appointment, and they schedule that appointment in plenty of time to avoid running out of medication. And let me add that, you know, when I'm reviewing those reports, it's kind of hard for me to get a sense of, you know, is it a particular agency? Is it a particular client? How much of an issue is this? How often does this happen? That kind of thing, just because I'm reading the individual reports. So I don't have a sense of this is, say, an issue in 15% of members. Is it an issue of 5% of members?
Because of the redaction, correct, Carolyn?
Right. So, so I have no idea. So I can't tell.
It makes it difficult in general.
Repeated situation, right. I have no way of knowing if it's a repeated situation with a member or a repeated situation with a particular care agency. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's come up just in general since the redactions have come into play with IRs. I mean, we used to get, and Eva can chime in on this, and I know Mandy probably has seen them before too, is we did used to get first names as well as agency names, and it was much easier to actually just for our own brains to process and file them to so that we it was much easier to monitor and review, whereas it makes it much more difficult when it's a number.
Yes. And I worked for 20 years in Head Start, where we were responsible for caring for the children's health in the classroom. The skills I learned in Head Start transfer surprisingly well to DDD issues. And one of the things that we did in Head Start was every child had an assigned Head Start ID number. And so I could share information using that Head Start ID number without violating confidentiality.
Same thing.
And that way we would know for sure that we were all talking about the same child without having the fuzziness of, Timothy Z. You know, are there more than one Timothy Z's? Because there could be, so that's where I'm coming from.
Michelle?
So I just wanted to bring up something with the metadata reports that we provide you guys monthly. Mm-hmm. Some of this information is available to you through that metadata report. So you've noticed that the one I'm looking at right now that says incidents per member by office provider and type does give you the first name of the member, and then it gives you the number of total incidents. Like there's one member that's identified six medication errors. That would be their incident count from this. And then there's the other form is the 6 month provider incident type. So that lists the provider and then also has the medication error category on there. So there is some data, just a reminder that there is some of that data provided to the committee.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I have trouble. I guess I need to look at that again because I'm having trouble kind of connecting that cognitively to the incident reports that I'm looking at. And then, of course, the other thing is that when I'm looking at a specific member and it says, oh, yeah, you know, they have six medication errors, I have no way of knowing if that's six refusals or if it's six true medication errors, or even if it's, totally out of everyone's control, there's a shortage of that medication situation.
Right. And so that is something that I haven't seen where we have the data to pull that specifically. It'll pull the medication error data, but not the breakdown of the refusals at this point. I don't know if we have the capability to narrow that down further for you.
And would that be something that is there anybody on the call from quality, or would we need to wait for James May to come back?
Giselle's on the call from quality. But I'm not sure what you're asking for the specific member refusals.
Correct. I think that one of the things that Carolyn is stating is if it's possible to separate med refusal from medication errors general. Is that correct, Carolyn?
Yes, because as an IOC member reviewing that, I don't feel like I have anything positive to add to that. I have no way of knowing when the medication refusal is a really serious issue or when it's a repeated issue. Like sometimes I'll be looking at things and I'm like, is this the same member with the repeated refusals? Because it seems like it, but there's no way for me to really know because they're all separate incident reports.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you're wondering if it's possible for the area for medication errors to be where they just run out, skip doses or wrong doses, and then have another separate category for medication refusals.
Yes, because I have nothing positive to add. I mean, to me, it feels like the busy work that we used to assign staff in the summer when we were concerned, certain staff in the summer, when we were concerned that they wouldn't be doing anything constructive with their time. And it just it's not a good use of my time to review errors. I can't be looking in them and going, gee, you know, this member has 10 medication refusals in a month. What is the care facility going to be doing about that?
And then, of course, that would be when we would bring it up in executive session and can go mm-hmm. into more detail about that, which right, we will be right. doing shortly.
Right, so but I have no way of identifying that individual member as mm-hmm. a repeated. So, there's no member ID number attached.
Okay, Eva has her hand up.
Eva. Okay, so Giselle, well, you already get those. So what you need to do is, when I sit there and see the same one, I look at the name. Sometimes you get the date of birth and the support coordinator, because there was one where I had two of them and I thought, oh my gosh. And it turns out they were two separate people because they had two different support coordinators. But when I have multiple in neglect or sometimes physical abuse, I'd sit there when they show up, when I read a bunch of them. So I write down the IR numbers. So if you see, if you're reading them all at one time, you see 10 IRs on the same individual with the same birthday, with the same support coordinator. I sit there under the little comment section. I write every one of those things. And I said, okay. And then I say, you know, then what you can do is, okay, support coordinator, the question is, because you have to have a question or otherwise they ignore you. Has the team met to look at so-and-so's refusal for meds? Okay. And then they have the fact, okay, now you're jumping it on. I'm sorry, Leah. You're making the support coordinator get the team together, supposedly, and they have to look at the issue on why are they refusing those meds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And let me tell you, if you start doing that, it will clear up your problem. Because this is the way you sort of, because then you don't have to come and have the meeting and have James looks up all those things and stuff. Then it gives them time to go inspect all that stuff.
But okay, I'm hearing Carolyn say that she wants to see if there's a way to separate. So is that even an option, Giselle?
So there's two things. Yeah. One is separating out the medication refusals. And the second is, I should not be having to play detective to figure out if it's the same member. I have never worked for an organization where, there isn't an identifying member, or there is an identifying number attached to that person. You go to hospital, you go to a lab, you're in Head Start. There's always an identifying number to make sure that we're not having to play detective. This is a volunteer position, and mm-hmm. I want to make good use of my time because I have finite time left on this planet, and I'm really, really aware of that right now. And so I don't want to be having to play detective to say, okay, this is the same person or it isn't the same person.
And maybe that is something that we can delve into a little bit more, or maybe DDD or ADOA might have some suggestions on coming up with member-specific numbers so that we can, I think that would well, be, go ahead.
I think they already exist.
Okay.
They're just not used.
Okay. Michelle?
So a member has a DDD number, which is an assist number. A member has an access number. That's their number when they receive services through access. Those numbers are redacted from the incident reports because they're identifiers for individuals. So we don't share those with you currently. There is a meeting that's happening with the public information officer, and we can ask about through her, because we're trying to follow what we've been mandated to do with providing incidents and redacting personal information. And we can ask her about this issue. This is good timing. We can ask her about this issue and see what she has to say and report back to you.
That would be great. Do we need to make a motion for that?
For us to ask?
Yes.
No, the meeting's already happening, so we can ask.
Okay, that would be great. And I think, go ahead, Carolyn.
Sorry. So I would still like to see the medication refusals separated out, because honestly, you know, if there's been 10 medication refusals, then that's something that DDD can deal with. I'm not sure what I bring to the table with that.
And I think
there are so many of them, and it's so time consuming just to review them and say no comment.
Well, let's see if Giselle has a comment on that. Do you think it's possible for us to get that separated?
Hello. Thank you. I would have to follow up on that. I'll have to talk with James. He's on vacation. He left the beginning of March, and he will return the 28th. So I can certainly discuss it with him and let him know your concerns.
Perfect. And then what we could do is, since we're, the next thing is the committee roundtable item for next meeting, Carolyn, I'm going to put that down, med refusal separated from med errors, as an agenda item. Okay.
Okay.
And then
we'll also put down the ID numbers.
Oh yes. The ID identification, and then put public info identification, follow up from public information officer, or public information office, correct? Mm-hmm. Public info officer. Okay, well, and then we'll have follow-up on both of those. And just for the sake of time, I know we only have a little bit of time left, and I'd like mm-hmm. to really get through some of the other areas. Staff shortages and day programs, that was something that that I can tag on to next month. And it's just a concern that I know that there's a lot of staff shortages in day programs. I know the group supported employment seems to be getting a lot of emphasis. And with that being said, I'd like to bring that up again next month. So we'll maybe just table that and put that in the parking lot until next month. How about ask questions and responses from January motion? I know this was a motion that we had sent off in end of January. Did we get the responses from that? Were the responses from those questions sent to us?
I believe they were. I can present them now as well, or I can email them out, or however you would like to proceed.
Let's just go ahead and present them now. That would be great if you can, if we can look at your screen.
Yes. Let me... Sorry, I'm just trying to find the right screen here.
No worries.
Okay. Can you see it? Is it too small?
Are we able to see it? Is everybody able to see it? I think it looks good.
Yep, I can see it.
I can see it.
Yes.
And Morgan, oops. Is it possible for you to email them to us as well?
Absolutely. Do you want me to do that?
Sure, that would be great.
Thank you.
So seclusion and restraints. Okay. So this doesn't go down. So so in this first question, it says that they submit their SARS to quality of management. So the SARS for Amber is seclusion and restrain. So if they have to do that, why wouldn't they not have to follow Article 9? And maybe that's the question. If they have to report SARS to the division.
Are you talking about the hospitals or ASH?
This was the question for Mercy Care and United Healthcare. And I think they had to do, so we were talking about behavioral health hospitals. So if the behavioral health hospitals have to report their SARS to the division, why would they not have to do Article 9?
Because they're a hospital and they're not required to. They're not contracted with DDD specifically. They're contracted with the health plan.
I know. But what I'm saying, if the division subcontractor are required to do the SARS, why? I mean, the question to me is, if they have to report the seclusion and restraints, you know what I mean? And the biggest problem with the restraints has to do with Article 9. So if they have to report them, how do we know they how can we find out from the report that they sent to QMU? Maybe the next question that we need to ask is, if they have to report the seclusion and restraints, then maybe the question is, then does QMU look and find out if they violated Article 9 when they did the SARS? That's the question. We want to know about, everybody keeps saying, well, they're not contracted, they're independent, they have their own QMU. But if they have to report the SARS to the division, then it seems to me we ought to be able to find out if, when they did the SARS, if they violated the division's Article 9. That's the question that I would like to ask.
Okay. So is the question that you want to know if they violated Article 9
when they did the SARS, because they said they have to report the SARS to the division. So the question the division needs to ask is, did they violate our Article 9 when they did the SARS?
They're okay. Not trained in Article 9, though, so.
Huh?
I think they are. I think they have to be trained in Article 9, correct? I think that was one of the questions.
Well, let's go down. We have to go down further.
Morgan, yeah, thank you.
The next one. So I guess this this is another one of these funny, fuzzy little things where the SARS report from ASH, those are those mechanical restraints and chemical restraints is, and then the problem with the incidents are they're all lumped into the IRs together.
I'm wondering, Eva, I'm wondering if we keep this, if we get this info, I mean, we have all of these responses and all this information here. I'm wondering if it would benefit us a little bit more. I don't know if we want to do another subcommittee or if we just all take the time between now and the next meeting and really look at these questions and answers. And then at the next meeting, formulate additional questions that we may have based upon this follow-up, or would you prefer to move forward into them right now?
So
over there supervising you,
I'd like to speak. I feel like I would really like the opportunity to review this entire Q&A before I can make an appropriate response.
I would second that on my end as well. Even though I was on the subcommittee that helped develop with Eva's significant help, I more thoughtful time. So, Eva, I know this is kind of your baby when it came to these questions and whatnot. But are you okay with us putting this on the next agenda and so that we all have a chance to really delve into these questions and answers?
Oh, yes, because already I found one of them where they made that comment.
Okay.
They don't have a 72 post-release.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I need to tell you this. I have a policy where they have to have that meeting. So I'll wait till next week and I will come up with questions.
Oh, Lisa, you're muted.
We just got that sent to us, correct?
We did. So I recommend that we all take a look at these questions and answers very carefully and come back to our next meeting in April with some potential questions and discussions for it, okay? Okay, now back to the agenda. Let's see, I know that we're kind of getting close to time. I did have, we have a roundtable discussion kind of leading into what we, potential agenda items for next month. And I think we've already kind of covered some of those. And I know that I'd like to take some time to go into executive session. You know, there've been a couple of, we have a few, items to discuss. Can I, have somebody make a motion to go into executive? And what we'll do is in the chat, I believe there should be a link, correct, Morgan?
Yes, I just put the whole information, but I'm going to put the link in there too.
Okay. So if you go to in call messages, we should be able to go. So I just need somebody to make a motion to go into executive session.
This is Carolyn. I make a motion to go into executive session.
I second.
And that was Amber that second, I believe. Okay, we'll go into executive session.
So before you go into executive session, will you let us know exactly who you would like to come into executive session to provide any guidance or support? We don't have James today, so Giselle can likely give you some feedback. Are you looking for her to come to this meeting?
I think that would be great.
Okay, anybody else? The liaisons will come with you for sure.
I think that should suffice.
Okay, all righty.
And then when we come back, we could do updates. And I apologize for, we'll have to put those updates on the top of the agenda next time. Okay, see you in executive session.
So everybody mute yourself when you go into executive, pretty please, from this meeting.
Is anyone having difficulty going in? Okay.
It took a second, Lisa, but then I was letting
you were able. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll try again.
I think somebody's letting you in. Yeah.
Okay, if anyone's still on regular, if I could get a link sent to me, I, for some reason, am not able to get in to executive session.
Would you like me to text it to you?
Yes, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Oh.
It won't even let me touch it. Thanks.
And then wait a few minutes to find out if the meeting is going to be open at 1 or it's going to be closed at 12 before executive session. I'm a person who wants to add a public input and compliance and just a question on service for a DD client. Can somebody respond? And if not, I'll hang up. Are they going to come back to continue?
Hello, Mr. Can you hear us currently?
Yes. No, I can't hear nobody. I thought maybe somebody got linked off or something by going executive session, but maybe go to one and I don't need to make a comment this time.
So if you, I'm sorry, sir, but the committee's in executive session right now.
Oh, they already went in the session. I thought they were getting ready to go in the session. I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of it. That's what you know, I would wait it. Somebody was making some changes, man, that's all. So there's no comment. I can't make a comment or anything, or can I relay a comment to you to pass it on, if that's possible?
So you're going to have to wait till they come back to their meeting to be able to provide a comment. You can't make a comment.
Are they going
to
come back
while they're in executive?
How long is the executive session last before?
I don't know. I can't really say.
Well, I assumed that already, but the scheduled meeting is at 1 o'clock on the bylaws that has been written and the compliance rules. And I'm just public input and I want to make a comment, that's all.
Sure, I understand that. There's just a barrier right now because they're an executive committee. You're not able to provide a public comment while the committee's not here present.
No.
They're in a side committee.
No, ma'am, I respect that. I understand that. But, you know, I was waiting. It was about 2.5 minutes, and then I said, can somebody hear me? I thought maybe there was some kind of transfer, that they were getting ready to go in the session. And I thought, you know, I just want to pass on some information as public advocate information, that's all. And I just wanted to share a couple of things that might be important just for information. And I thought maybe I'd just share it with you and you'd pass it on, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, well, let me make a note and I can do that.
Well, if I make a couple of comments, can you just pass it on at the post?
Sure, that works.
Okay, my name is Delgado. I serve a compliance and parent support in Northern Arizona. My comments, I want to say just in two things. This month is the National Disability Awareness Month. I'm an advocate across country and I keep in connection with 7-H states. And they do a lot of such celebrations. Arizona hasn't had that much. But I just want to mention to the community that the month of March, we celebrate. And what we do, I have done, you know, I've received information from other states and Texas. They cannot, we get a governor's, as we do in Arizona here, we got a governor's proclamation. And what some of us do, or others, we send a bulletin, we send a copy, and we put the bulletin in the school with the principal and pass it on to the school bulletin. Like they have one every other week, I think, every bi-weekly. But a lot of special education disabled students and the families read that. That would give them some kind of encouragement, good feeling. And those who don't, not, they give them a chance to pat them on the back and say, hey, keep it up, we're doing it, we're here to support. They did that in Texas and Dallas, I think. I got reports in Oregon and like managed something. And I thought that was good. And, you know, pass it on to the colleges, students, or to special education especially. And because this is the National Disability Awareness, they just give it some attention. And the principal would just help to do that support. We also, what Dan and I would agree with that, we're also doing the same to church bulletins. Those of us who are in the church, those who go to church and have different types of churches, of course, and they have their church bulletins. And they do the same.
I'm sorry, Mr. Delgado, we're having some technical issues. I'm going to have to let you go.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to make a comment. That's all. I thought it was important. It's just a celebration reminder.
Sure, I appreciate that, and thank you very much.
Yeah, if you heard what I said, they're sending out to school bulletins and search bulletins, and along with the Cracker Lakes locally, they do, but mostly those two areas, and they get some.
Okay, well, look, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to have to go on that.
No, I understand, but I just thought I'd share it with you since, you know.
Okay, thank you.
I thought you had good information, that's all. Thank you very much for allowing me to make my truly mine, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. No, I'm closing off. Bye-bye.
Oh, I was just going to say, per policy, the IOC has the rights to.
Okay, so we're back in the regular session. Couple of things, and I apologize. Thank you everyone for being patient with this little bit lengthier meeting. If we can get go to the updates of anybody from BDD, et cetera, have updates.
I can give a little bit of an update. I don't know how many, I think most of everyone else left, but I have a little bit of what we were kind of giving you guys your data and how many incident reports that you guys have received. So in for February, there was 716 incident reports in the shared drive. So this included 55 open and 661 closed. There was 35 questions that were submitted. And then you guys also did receive an answer as well in February from questions that you guys had in January. So you guys should have also received that email. So I have this nagging flies around me today. We also have our volunteer appreciation luncheon coming up on April 24th at 11 a.m. at the Desert Willow Conference. So we hope to see you all there. There's also a statewide chairs meeting scheduled at the end of April. So if you would like to be in, to join, just go ahead and reach out and we can send the link. There's also the public town hall meeting. The next one is going to be April 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. Lee has identified the speakers that are attending for April are the Parents as Paid Caregivers Waiver. And then in May is going to be the Arizona Center for Disability Law and Voters Rights Voting People for People with Disabilities.
For those townships, is that something that I don't know if other IOC committee members wouldn't mind getting a an invite to those? I know for me, just having an invite will just kind of keep them on my radar, and then that way I can join as I'm able. Would mm-hmm. other committee members be like just a invite to the general town? Yes, Michelle?
So that's an open public forum that DDD holds every month, and it's done on the first Thursday of every month.
Is it at a particular time?
Yes. When I look at the website, it is done from 6 to 8 p.m.
Ooh, okay. And does it have the same link like we do each month?
That I'm not certain of. Let me check and see if I can identify that. I'll just do a quick copy and paste. But so about sending a specific invite, DDD doesn't send out specific Got invites it. For this. Okay. So that, let me check though and see if it's the same every month. I can look at that real quick.
Well, would it be possible if you and Morgan or if Morgan can just send us a link to the first one that's coming up? Or the next up and coming one?
Yeah. The April.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay.
Yeah, that was all of my updates I have as well.
I know others left. I'm so sorry. We need to definitely, we'll have to put that up at the top of the agenda if at all possible. The updates from those that attend. What about since we're on and we have all of our IOC committee members, what about a discussion of change in of day and time of the district central meeting? I know that what are individual thoughts of changing our meeting date to Friday mornings? Yes, Carolyn? You're muted.
Sorry. Yes, that's a thumbs up for me. That would work.
You like Friday mornings? Mm-hmm. Mandy?
What time are we thinking? Because the earlier it is, the harder it is for me to be ready on time. So I have to consider that as well. So I mean, Friday is fine. Like, it's a fine day unless I have an appointment or something, which, you know, sometimes those come up. Of course. Because I've shared personal information with you, you know why those take precedence over other things. So,
of course.
But
like a 10 a.m. Friday morning?
Yeah, 10 works. Because I know you had mentioned 9:30 to me on a text or an email, and I was like, that's
a little early. Push
it a little bit.
That was the special meeting we did at 9:30 last couple Fridays ago. And, but I was thinking, I mean, what are others' thoughts about a 10 a.m. Friday? Is that an easier time to put into our like the fourth Friday of every month?
Yep.
I am open.
10 a.m. fourth Friday every month. Okay. I heard some feedback from other individuals that were interested in joining the committee, and they mentioned that Mondays are sometimes tough, especially when people work. Mondays are kind of a heavy work day, whereas Fridays sometimes are a little bit more flexible. So I just thought we can maybe make a change. Eva, what are your thoughts on that?
It's okay with me, Friday.
Friday, 10 a.m.? So is this something that we can just make a motion and to change our, yes, Giselle?
Hi, I'm just taking a look at, I don't usually attend these. So, I'm just looking at James' calendar, and it looks like on Fridays, he's got a daily huddle touch point at 9:30. So I'm not sure how he would feel, but I can definitely let him know.
A daily what?
He's got it every Friday. He's got, wait, is it other days as well? Hold on, let me check. Well, I'm just looking at his Friday calendars. It looks like he usually has a 9:30 daily huddle touch point meeting at 9:30.
Okay, so a 10 a.m. might be okay for him, especially if it's if we run a couple hours, because we want to do like 10 to 12. We try to keep the meeting within 2 hours. This month, because
I'm not sure how long the touch point meetings are for. My counterpart is covering those meetings right now while James is gone. But I guess my only concern would be if it runs over, then I don't know if that's going to be an issue for you guys.
I think that having James even just for the last hour of the meeting and executive is always important for James to be there, because he's the, you know, he has so much information on IR feedback, right, etc.
The district manager. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what are your thoughts, Mandy?
And I know way back when they used to not come in till the end of meetings anyway.
When they were in person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They never came in at the beginning of the meetings anyway. They always came in right before executive after lunch. So maybe if it doesn't work for him right away, maybe he can just hop on when he's available at that point.
Okay, I'll note it for him just so he's aware that you want to make that change. Just wanted to put that out there because I was looking at his calendar.
Yeah. But,
all right, thank you.
Okay, so that would basically put us at the next meeting. If we make this motion, which we'll have to make the motion, and I'm somebody else is supposed to make it, not me. That's what I hear. So if somebody would like to make a motion to change our monthly IOC District Central meetings.
This is Carolyn. I make a motion to change your monthly IOC meetings.
To Friday, the fourth Friday at 10 a.m.?
To the fourth Friday at 10 a.m. And hopefully James can attend.
Okay. And do I get a second?
I'll second that for you.
Mandy seconds. Awesome. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So anyone opposed? No one is opposed. So we got the IOC meetings. We'll, monthly meetings will be Fridays at 10 a.m. And then that means the next one will be on the 26th of April. And also remember that at any time, if we need to make a special meeting, if something comes up that's urgent that we want to address prior to April 26th, we can always propose a special meeting. And I think that was something that I wasn't super aware of, but I'm very thankful for knowing about that, especially if something significant comes up in between.
Can Mandy? We have Our liaison send out the updated invite so it goes on my calendar correctly, because changing it for me would be a pain in the butt, and it's easier if we just have the updated.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. And then we said that we were going to go over real quickly before we adjourn. We'll go over some of those IRs. We have, I don't have everybody's, but I do have under mine so far, I have emergency measures, other behavior, other injury, other abuse, and then I read deaths. We have human rights, accidental injury, client missing, neglect, and suicide. So the ones that aren't assigned right now are human rights, accidental injury, client missing, neglect, and suicide. And then, of course, Eva likes to read all of the closed ones, which she's a lifesaver with that.
So I believe, if I remember correctly, I had neglect.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, so that's fine.
Okay, we'll keep you with neglect, and then I'll continue with as many as I can. okay, awesome.
I don't read all the IRs. I send you a list of those that I don't read.
Correct. Okay. We are all volunteers, and we're all doing our best.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll do what I can when I can. You know, my life's crazy right now, so.
Of course. Okay. So with that being said, is there any other discussion that's on the agenda here that that I've missed that we didn't address to move forward into April?
Is there anything for Larry for updates?
Larry, do you have any updates? From Larry, Eva, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I was wondering how many people didn't do their...
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was double muted. I do not have any updates specifically for the committee today. I believe everybody in the committee has taken the Law 2000 training. So thank you very much. Amber, I believe I was not present on your last meeting when you were voted on. So congratulations and welcome aboard. I know you, our HR department was working with you on the onboarding process. Any issues with that?
Not yet.
At all?
No, and I have a training on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Okay. You're the first one to go through this, so I'm kind of interested to see how it all works out. So you're kind of the guinea pig, so. But
and then I've requested to be a part of all new member onboarding trainings.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's fantastic. And I do think that the Law 2000, the boards and commission training on the conflict of interest, I think it's beneficial, and I think it will help alleviate some of the questions that might come up. And always feel free to ask a question if you don't know or if you're not sure of. We do understand that and it's not expected that you know the ins and outs of all the statutes inside and out. That's not realistic. So we're here to help. And
except Eva.
Yeah, no, Eva's the expert. She's the OG of the committee. So we're basically here just to provide the, you know, the bumpers to the on the bowling, right? So just kind of keep everything kind of going like it needs to go. And so we're here to help. So just let me know if you have any questions or concerns.
Thank you very much.
Michelle, did you have a question?
Just a comment. The training, I know that Morgan and I are meeting with Amber and with Lisa and Carolyn, or at least maybe Carolyn. I know Lisa as well. Mm-hmm. And we're going to provide an overview of the access to the shared drive And give Amber her overview of DDD incident reports, that high level overview as well. Was there other training that you had, Amber, or is that the training that you're speaking of?
Oh, that's the one.
Okay. Okay. So that's a one-on-one training with the liaison, so we can help her with the access to the drive and familiarize what DDD incident reports look like, what each section is showing you, and that kind of high-level overview of that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll also be scheduling an open meeting law training here in the next couple months. So it's another avenue to get more information. And just for on the IOC website, just FYI for the committee, if you go to the IOC website, and there's the actual training that we did last year is posted there under, I believe it's posted under resources. If you hover your mouse over resources and you go down to training, it's posted there as well. And there's also, along with the audio training, there's a slideshow that goes with that. So feel free to play around on there, snoop around that website as much as you can.
Okay.
And it's a good way to learn. But if you, like I said, if you have any questions, concerns, I'm always available. Just let me know.
Awesome.
Thank you,
Larry. Thank you. Do we have to retake that class once we took it, or
the Law 2000 class?
No, the open meeting law stuff.
No, you do not. It's not a requirement. It's more of if you're interested and you want to learn more, it's there for you. Okay. So it's good. It's always good to get a refresher. Especially right. The chairs, I would suggest the chairs at least kind of do a refresher training, because there's just a lot of ins and outs of the open meeting law that that we got to abide by and follow and all that. Yeah,
and Robert's rule and all of that. Correct. I just got about two big stacks of 30 plus years of paperwork from my Aunt Carol McNulty. So.
Oh, okay.
And some great books, yeah, some Robert's Rules books and stuff like that. So I have some bedside reading.
Yeah, it's not very exciting reading, unfortunately. But
actually, but 50 years. I apologize, 50 years of history.
Oh wow, I didn't realize Carol was your aunt.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, like I said, if you guys need anything from me, I'm always available. Just let me know.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Okay. And now, do we need to make a motion to end, correct? Does somebody would somebody like to make a motion to
So we do have Alex. Who is Alex? Isn't he from United Health?
Alex is he's not from United Health. He is Alex, if you'd like to introduce yourself again. Alex is a clinical psychologist that he and Megan work together, and she's also another clinical psychologist, and they're interested in the committee and possibly one moment he said he unplugged his camera.
Oh, okay.
Possibly interested in exploring what we do and possibly joining in the future.
Okay. I think I had it in the wrong spot.
Hello. Yeah, I'm a clinical psychologist here in Arizona. So I do some work with access and with this population, and just interested in kind of learning more, seeing what I can do to help.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. Yes. And you and Megan are feel free to join us anytime. Or once you guys decide or see if you guys are interested in, we'd love to have you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Could we get a motion to end our IOC monthly meeting?
This is Carolyn. I make a motion to end the monthly meeting.
And Eva seconds.
And all those in favor say aye.
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 Anyone opposed?
Okay. Thank you guys all for being here. It was wonderful to see all your faces. Bye. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.